National News.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 13th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. We're now 10 days away from the opening ceremony of the Tokyo Olympics in Japan. The men's and women's Olympic marathons are scheduled for the last 2 days of the games. The women will line up on August 7th. And the men on August 8th, both races will be held in Sapporo, Japan. Olympic organizers decided to move the races to the cooler climate of Sapporo to try and avoid some of Tokyo's typically very hot temperatures in early August. Look for African runners to be on the medals podium in both the men's and women's Olympic marathons. World record holder Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya will be defending his Olympic title in Sapporo. Eliud acknowledges this year's games will be different as they have been delayed a year due to the COVID-19 pandemic and will go ahead without spectators.
But all in all, we respect the authorities. We respect the challenges. You know, as I always say, marathon is life. Then we all need to take care of the lives of the many people. So it's a high chance, and I respect what IOC and local organizing committee of Japan have decided that there will be no fans. That's okay. So, but I'm excited actually to participate and run in Tokyo, in Sapporo, and even without fans.
Even without fans, Eliud Kipchoge knows the stakes will be very high in Sapporo.
Sapporo, actually, if I win a gold medal, this will be the highest ever because it's my second gold medal. I always value Olympic Games. I really value Olympic Games, and I'm really fighting for it. I'm really training for it. That's the Olympic Games is as important as any other, as important. I don't think we can actually compare with anything because always done in every 4 years, and this one is 5 years, and it's being watched by over 1 billion people from all around the globe. So it's really important race.
Eliud Kipchoge believes the upcoming Tokyo Olympics will provide hope to a world that's been battered by the coronavirus pandemic.
Absolutely, yes. Actually, my participation personally. Our participation actually as a Kenyan team and the participation for all the countries who are going to participate in Tokyo Olympic Games is a sign of hope to the whole world. It's a sign of hope in that we are actually preparing for the best moments ever whereby we are going to have our normal lives again. So there is a light on the tunnel. That's why we are going to Sapporo. We are going to Tokyo and run to keep hope to the whole world that we are doing better, and we are actually on the right and the basic transition towards our normal lives.
That's marathon world record holder Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya, who will defend his Olympic title on August 8th in Sapporo, Japan. And Eliud spoke with Reuters News from Kenya.
Hi, my name is Julius Diego, former world javelin champion and Olympic silver medalist. And you are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Julius Yago and Eliud Kipchoge are training for the Tokyo Olympics with hopes of winning medals for Team Kenya. And Katie Zafiris is training for the Tokyo Games with hopes of winning a medal in the women's triathlon for Team USA. Picking up the story, here's Dan Friedel.
We're joined now on the Sunny Side of Sports by USA triathlete Katie Zafiris. Katie, welcome to the show.
Hi, yes, thanks for having me.
Katie, it's been really great to get a chance to know you, for our audience to get a chance to know you this last year plus. I mean, certainly we made our introduction when the entire world was on the COVID-related lockdown. And then we checked in again with you in the fall as you have started racing again. I thought maybe, first of all, we should offer you congratulations on officially being named a member of the U.S. Olympic team. And you could let our listeners know about, you know, what you've been up to get ready for going to Tokyo.
Yeah, so since we last talked, I got to do a few races last year, but really the focus wasn't on executing 2020 once the Olympics were postponed. It was more about executing for 2021 and for Tokyo. So my winter I spent just normal prep that we would do going into the racing season, and stayed at home just a bit longer because our racing season started a bit further into the year. Normally we would start in Abu Dhabi in March, but instead our first race was in early May in Yokohama. And everything was going super smoothly. At the end of March, we bought a house in North Carolina. Very exciting. Got to spend some time with the family and check out a new area and just get in a lot of training. But we went at the end of March to Europe and rejoined our group, was gaining momentum. And then kind of in early April, my dad passed away unexpectedly. And that was really hard. It's the biggest challenge I've ever faced in my life, not just with triathlon, but just everything. My parents are my world. And so that was really hard. And so it affected everything, emotionally and physically, and the plan, like training. So the first couple races in the season that I did, one being an automatic Olympic qualifier, that was 1 month after my dad died. And that one didn't go really well. It was challenging situations for everybody with COVID, but it was extra challenge just being so soon after my dad had passed away. And I probably wasn't emotionally ready to be on that start line, but it was something I felt like I needed to do. And looking back, I'm glad I did it. It's like getting the first race done without my dad.
Katie, I just wanted to offer our sympathy. You know, with the chance that we've had to get to know you over the last year or so, it's sad news to hear when anybody who you consider a friend has a loss in the family. So we're really sorry to hear about that news, but you know, glad to know that you're putting things back together. What has that been like for you to kind of get your foundation back?
Well, thank you, first of all, for the support. And also getting my foundation back, it was really hard in the beginning because I was trying to race and kind of make up for lost training that I hadn't done when I had gone home for like the funeral and everything. And so I just kind of was like treading water. And then once the last race, well, the second race as well, once that was completed, we went up to a high altitude camp with the group in Pont-Rameau, France. And I felt like I could finally breathe because it was just like, okay, now I can train. I didn't know what was going to happen with Olympic selection at that point because the last spot came down to discretion, and the Americans just have such a strong field of women, and I hadn't really proved myself in the first two races. So I was waiting for Olympic selection, but I was really like gaining momentum in training and feeling good mentally, emotionally, and getting more into a rhythm. So once I got that call that I got selected for the team, I was so excited and grateful for the opportunity. And for the last 6 weeks, I've had really good training, really consistent. We did about 3 to 4 weeks at altitude, and now we've come down to Banyoles, Spain, to be in more heat conditions. So today we just did in 34 Celsius, middle of the day, we did our hard run workout to start preparing and getting acclimatized to what we expect to be pretty hot conditions in Tokyo.
Right. Certainly Tokyo has a reputation in the summer for being a pretty tropical climate. We're joined on the Sunny Side of Sports by USA triathlete Katie Zafiris, who's just on the verge of heading to Tokyo to compete at the Olympics. And I did want to ask you a little bit about what that was like for you. Certainly all athletes want to kind of set the standard on the field or set the standard on the track to give themselves a victory or a qualification for an event? What was it like for you to be waiting to hear from USA Triathlon that you would become a member of the Olympic team? It must have been quite an anxiety-provoking period of time while you were waiting to hear the news.
It was both really challenging, but also I think at that point, like, having the races done that I could have done for this year also provided me a little bit of, like, freedom in the sense that I was, like, I knew I couldn't do anything more at that point, and I was trying to play catch-up before those races and in those races, trying to, like, show up and show that, like, I'm capable of doing what I did in 2019 and almost every year before then. And so, like, once those races were finished, even though I wasn't selected, I was just like, okay, well, they know my resume. Like, I was able, like, they knew kind of what happened. They knew my dad passed away, and they knew I had, like, put myself out there in the races to give myself a shot of automatically qualifying. And though, like, the performances weren't what I feel, like, the results weren't what I feel like I'm capable of, I also feel like I knew the reasons behind it. and it was something, it's different trying to get ready after taking 2 weeks basically off training, getting ready to race in for races that are, like, back to back and not very far after my dad passed away, versus having now, like, 8 good weeks to train and prepare for Tokyo. So during that time, it was like hard to wait, but at the same time I was like, well, I knew my whole career. I'd done what I
It speaks for itself. Yeah. Well, so what was the feeling when you got the word? How did it make you feel to finally, you know, you've been kind of climbing up this mountain, anticipating the chance to get to the Olympics, and then the extra year of waiting due to the pandemic? How did it feel to finally find out that you had been awarded a spot on the team?
It felt so good. I mean, I feel like I was relieved because I was seeing how my training was going and, like, how I was feeling, and, like, I was very confident in myself, but I was like, well, it's up to the selection committee to see if they have the same confidence in me. And so, like, I was just so thankful that they did. And because I think as I got more to feeling like myself in training, I was like, oh no, like, what if they don't? Yeah, I was just very thankful that they did. And I also know it was a really hard decision, so it's something that I don't take for granted.
That's former triathlon world champion Katie Zafiris. And she spoke with Dan Friedel from Spain, where Katie is wrapping up her training for the Tokyo Olympics. And we'll hear more of Katie's conversation with Dan later this week. If our VOA listeners want to follow Katie in the event, the Olympic Women's Triathlon is scheduled for July 27th at the Odaiba Marine Park in Tokyo.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo, and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat music show. On the football beat, there have been celebrations in Italy after the national team won its first European title in 53 years. The Italians edged host England in a dramatic penalty kick shootout Sunday at Wembley Stadium in London. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with the chief football writer at ACLSports.com in Nigeria, Fisayo Dairo.
I believe the final was none less than expected when you have perhaps the two best teams in the competition coming toe-to-toe in the final of such magnitude. You expect nothing less than what we saw on the night. You know, Italy have been very consistent, England as well, with their coming home mantra. Certainly these two sides really wanted it, and it's no surprise that they could not be separated after 90 and 120 minutes. I think it's also a win for football over the COVID pandemic. We had to wait 1 year to see this, and I think it was worth the wait in the end. Seeing over 70,000 fans camped inside the magnificent Wembley Stadium was very good. A very good win for football, I must say. Kudos to the Italians. They seemed as though they were going to be rolled over by the English. The way England started and scored an early goal, the back three formation of Gareth Southgate gave them extra width in the right and the left wing back positions. And it wasn't a surprise that the two wing backs combined for the first goal. But like I mentioned earlier, kudos to the Italians. Roberto Mancini once again showed what a kind of top tactician he is. He brought his side back into the game. They totally dominated the second half, got a deserved equalizer, could have even gone ahead to win it. And in shootout, of course, it's a lottery. Could fall either way, and the Italians winning penalty shootouts twice in a European Championship for the first time in history just goes to show how deserved of a champion they are.
It's been reported that racial slurs or abuse were used against some England players who missed penalties. What's your reaction to this?
Sadly, racism is a topic that has refused to go away from football. And I'm someone that likes to take a look at things holistically. I believe it's not just about football. In our societies, racism, discrimination has not gone away. And that is what read his ugly head again on Sunday night. You know, these are professionals that also wanted the win very much for themselves, for their families, for their fans. And we all know that penalty shootouts are lotteries. You know, it could go either side. The goalkeeper can save, can be converted. You know, everyone wants the best for himself and for their team. But in the end, one had to win. Goalkeeper had to save some. Players have to convert some. So it's very unfortunate when, you know, we start seeing racial slurs and social media abuses coming in terms of their race to these players. It's very unfair. But again, that's what the society is all about. You see players taking the knees before matches. You've seen the kicked out campaign of UEFA. A whole lot of organizations are doing what they can to ensure that racism is stamped out of football. But the reality is, if we stamp it out of football and we don't stamp it out of the society, it will still come back to onto the football. Because football mirrors the society. By and large, football is played among those, you know, that are in our society. It's sad, and I do hope that very, very soon, in years to come, we can just find a way to get a solution to this niggling issue of racism in sports.
Bukayo Saka, what's the assessment of his outings? And also, do you think more players of Nigerian origin can make the English team?
Oluwabukayo Saka is one player that has been a revelation since he got his breakthrough at Arsenal. Ever since he made his Arsenal debut in 2018, he has grown in leaps and bounds. And I think it's still somewhat surprising that he got to play such a huge role for England at a major tournament, still a teenager. That's a testament of what he has done. But again, I must say that is what an average African, an average Nigerian can do. The can-do spirit is there. The talent is there. And if you go to the streets of England, to the clubs, the major clubs, talk about them, Chelsea, Manchester City, Manchester United, Arsenal. There are a whole lot of players with Nigerian heritage in their academies. And I have no doubt in my mind that in years to come, even very imminently, we still get to see more of them featuring for England, because that is where they were born. That is where they had their football parentage. Yes, a couple of them might eventually come back home to play for Nigeria, but majority in the end, we tend to follow the footsteps of players like Bukayo Saka, Justin Fashanu, and so much other, even Tammy Abraham, who couldn't play in this competition for England. But we are proud of Bukayo Saka, and I have no doubt in my mind that a lot more Nigerian footballers born in the UK will follow in his footsteps.
That's Fasayo Dairo, the chief football writer at ACLSports.com in Nigeria. Andy spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Sunday Olise, former captain and coach of the Super Eagles of Nigeria. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, Sunday.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. Tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight? Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Paul Tergat is now the president of the National Olympic Committee of Kenya, and I know he'll be closely following the performance of Kenyan athletes at the upcoming Tokyo Games. Meanwhile, another former Kenyan running star, Tegla Lerupe, we'll be closely following the performance of the refugee Olympic team in Tokyo. Tegla is the team's chef de mission. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, Magume Davis Rakawinge profiles Tegla Lerupe.
Tegla Lerupe holds the world records in both 25 and 30 kilometers and previously held the world marathon record. She was also the first African woman to win the New York Marathon. She says her entry into long-distance athletics was by fate.
I grew up in a very remote area, where by going to school I was running 10 kilometers. So I found myself a long-distance runner. Because 10 kilometers, like 20 kilometers a day is already you are training for the marathon.
Tegla says this rendered her endurance, and starting with 3,000 meters, she graduated marathon, where she went on to win many, including Rotterdam Marathon, Berlin Marathon, Leipzig Marathon, and as already mentioned, the renowned New York Marathon. Just like her introduction to athletics, her entry to peace activism was equally inspired by circumstances. Her village, Kapsait, of West Pokot, some more than 600 kilometers north of Nairobi, was characterized with cattle rustling. Growing up, Tegla says, she suffered a lot of social injustices, but decided to use that positively, impacting on others.
They used to say, okay, Tegla is not a good person because he comes from this conflict area. And when I represent the country, sometimes they used to leave me behind because I had nobody to talk or to protect me, and because of the stigma. So I went through the stigma, but it did not... It not kill my motivation to succeed. And I was lucky that I went to Germany and I was able to conquer all the difficulties.
Though still an active athlete, she was usually invited to speak to young people and become an active member of Peace and Sports Foundation, an organization that uses sports to champion peace in communities. But there was one final spark for her to come back home and engage with her community.
I was also the victim that our animals were stolen to Uganda, all the animals from my farm. And finally, the government of Uganda returned the animals because they realized this animal comes from Tegla, and they say, well, she's our daughter who stood for Africa.
With support from the Kenyan government, she started a peace race in her area, bringing local communities from Uganda, South Sudan, and Kenya. She never looked back, eventually started incorporating refugees.
When they came from Sudan, some came to Kakuma, some came to our region, and they settled there. As an athlete, I used to feel so bad when we go to Europe, and for them they stay.
And when a chance came from IOC for heart help and fine-tune refugees to represent at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics, she took it with open hands, consequently becoming the chef de mission. Kenyan sports analyst Isaac Swira says other sportsmen and women should learn a lot from her acts of kindness and compassion.
I think she's done a lot for Kenyan athletics. She's an icon. Look at the investment she's made in Rift Valley just to tap talent, to nurture, and to give them hope and a chance to fulfill their potential.
Tegla says she's proud to associate with refugees.
Going to Rio, it was just to open doors to see if the other people will come in to support. But they have realized now that the refugees are not, it's almost like another nation, because they are all of us, and we will never get rid of refugees unless we get rid of a war. But still, if the conflict is still in this world, we still have this displaced people. Today, after Rio, most of our athletes became ambassadors, and many nations and also NOCs accepted the support to support the refugees.
As the chef de mission, Tegla says she believes her refugee Olympics team could bang a medal also and make the whole world proud. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
My name is Nesli Catherine. I am the first female boxer from Uganda that will represent my country at the Olympics in Tokyo, Japan. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm telling the parents out there and the girls who are interested in boxing that please, parents, support your daughters in any sport, anything they would like, so that you do be the first, you do help them with the first blessing for the game. And the girls out there, please be disciplined and fear God first, because in fearing God, there is where you get the knowledge of everything and the blessings. And please be authentic to yourself, believe in yourself, and always keep in mind that everything is possible.
Thanks, Catherine, and good luck at the Tokyo Olympics. International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach suffered from a slip of the tongue in Japan's capital on Tuesday as he said Chinese people instead of Japanese people, but he quickly corrected himself.
And our common target is safe and secure games for everybody, for the athletes, for all the delegations, and most importantly, also for the Chinese people, Japanese people.
The Japanese people have not exactly welcomed these Olympics with open arms. Newspaper polls have indicated many Japanese do not want the games to be held because of the coronavirus pandemic. Once again, IOC President Thomas Bach.
And the Japanese people can have confidence in all the efforts we are undertaking to make these games for them secure and safe, with all the intensive, most strict COVID countermeasures, with the great vaccination program we have been undertaking worldwide. So all this is in solidarity with the Japanese people.
Bach's comments came at a meeting with Seiko Hashimoto, the president of the Tokyo Games local organizing committee, and he praised Hashimoto and her colleagues.
Very heartfelt thanks to you and all your colleagues in the organizing committee for the great work already being achieved. We will continue to be stronger together. And I say Tokyo 2020, Gambari Mashu.
That's Japanese for let's do our best. And that's IOC President Thomas Bach speaking Tuesday in Tokyo, Japan.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Finally, this Sunny Side of Sports programming note, the energetic Andy Edwards is watching the athletics action this evening at the Gateshead Diamond League meet in England. The meet will feature more than a few Olympians who are hoping to get on the medals podium in Tokyo, and Andy will have a report on Wednesday. wraps up the July 13th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.